Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Stephen the Warman Writes Kickfighting Podcast Show. I'm your host, Stephen the Warman. You are listening to this podcast in one of two ways. Either you are at my blog, which is lordgaul.podbean.com. I upload a show to that once a week, once every other week, just kind of depends on my schedule. And you are listening to the most efficient way, and the way that I recommend all you listen to it, go to the iTunes search engine, enter LORDGAUL, or enter Warman Kickfighting Show, and my podcast pops right up. For those who are big into Twitter, follow me on Twitter at twitter.com/StephenTheWarman. And, pretty much the past couple weeks, past week, there has been some really high-level kickboxing action. This show is going to be about results more than anything. I will do another show for the Glory Preview on Wednesday, but today I'm going to go ahead and just do a show that focuses mainly on the results that happened in the last couple weeks, and I promise you guys, I would get to some stadium stuff because I hadn't been doing the stadium fights really, really strongly lately. I hadn't been focusing on, because when I do the stadium fights, I've got to do them different than how I do my kickboxing fights. A lot of times the kickboxing fights, they just kind of flow in together, and I can kind of tell a narrative and a story based off of, how the title picture is and who's going towards what glory title and who should fight who because of certain organizations and the fighters that they have. But for the stadiums, sometimes it's a little bit tougher for me to give a narrative as far as how a full year goes, because there are years where, one guy can end up fighting another guy 4 out of 5 months, so it's tougher to get a narrative. It's just kind of like who wins the championship of each other that year. So it can be a little bit more difficult. So I've decided that whenever I do those fights, I sit down and I give the technical rundown of what I'm seeing. I give a technical rundown of this is what's happening in a fight. This is what you can learn from these kind of skill sets. And that is the only reason why you don't see me post them as much. I've got to spend a little bit more time with them. I've got to have technical breakdown. I've got to slow it down as opposed to just kind of going through the natural flow of how a kickboxing card would work. I want to make sure I start at the top. Couple options today. We're going to do the Infusion had a really fun show. And, as I talked about the stadium stuff, we're going to start it in Japan as we have the K1's most entertaining show of the year, probably one of my favorite cards of the year. I really, really enjoyed this. This was their champions event, and the champions event, which was, Takuro Koyarube, Ku Fairtex, Murat Gregorian, who was scratched thanks to an injury, but he did come out for the event. I can't remember if it's his injury or Sonny Dalbec's injury, but that was all put together, and I was really, really excited about this card, how it came together, despite losing that one title fight. I thought that it was one of the better fight cards of the whole year. Just going to go ahead and get into the action. First and foremost, revenge. As Ku Fairtex stops Kumura KO in round one. And here goes my favorite thing about this. First of all, when they met earlier this year, and I said to you guys already, I thought Ku Fairtex was winning the fight. I thought he was winning easy. And then he got caught in exchange and he went down. At minimum, the fight should have been an extra round. But I thought that he won the fight up until that point. They decided to give the decision to Minoru. He is the star that they've been most pushing. I just think that they've got something unique with him. I think the girls like him. I think he's got a way of how he talks, as far as, he speaks Japanese. He's Brazilian, speaks fluent Japanese. Looks like he's, any American walking down the street when I look at him. I almost see, no diversity just in my, as far as, being Brazilian, I don't really see it as much as I see him just being, a casual Caucasian American. I didn't see something in his look that would suggest otherwise. If I walked up to him and he just started speaking English to me, I would have never guessed, So looking at him and his look, his charisma, his KO power, the way there is something about him that is a star. People are pulled towards him. The fact that he's not Japanese and he was the headliner on this card, it shows you how much faith they have in him, how much they like he, how much he sells himself. And he comes out and he gets absolutely ran over. Fairtex did a great job early. He had an exchange with a body kick and he threw shots, powerful shots right afterwards. And Minoru just kind of took himself back to the ropes. And once he did that, I think Ku was just looking for his moments to explode again. This time he waited till he was in a corner. He scored a straight left hand that scored big. And as Minoru is going down, a big left knee comes up as well to finish it, and that was it. Kuvertex was through strong before. He pretty much got hit with nothing. He had a couple moments where, like, he scored, and Kumara tried to kind of, you know, laugh it off and, you know, kind of, you know, touch gloves and whatever, but from the beginning of this fight, Kuvertex had his mind made up. He was going to go, he's going to bring this fight, he was going to bring some awesome offense, and he did just that. Dominant performance, proving to be the 65kg champion of the world, the guy to beat at the weight class. It was fun to see this type of statement performance by Kuvertex. Really good stuff. Next fight in the card we're going to talk about is the Brothers Duels. They do it again. This time, Hirotaka Urabe gets a flying knee victory over Koya Urabe. I said this if you guys were following me on Twitter. The reason why Koya Urabe lost this fight is because he suddenly had a conscience in the second round. He was clearly winning the kickboxing scores. Like, Hirotaka wasn't even getting close to scoring anything offensively effective. He had scored a big shot, and then I thought he let up a little bit, but I didn't go after it too much. You know, I was like, okay, I could have read that wrong and so on. But then it happened again. He scored a big, you know, flurry after landing the clean kickboxing shots throughout two rounds. He landed a big score, and he let off the gas, and he started just kind of playing this, like, fast hand sort of thing. That was not the case for Hirotaka, who was down, who wanted to be the best in the world, probably hated the fact that he lost to his brother. He explodes into a jumping knee that causes a down in Koya Urabe. Koya was able to get up somehow because he went down, hands flat and everything. He was able to get up. Round three was an entertaining round. Like, he was clearly fighting back, looking to, you know, battle himself into a fight that he was clearly out of. He was looking to definitely, you know, make sure that, okay, if I did lose round two thanks to the down, I won round one. It's vital that I get round three. And I thought he was scoring well, but I thought Hirotaka kept his cool, kept looking for his moments, kept scoring big shots here and there in between, and then bang, another flying knee, jumping knee, scores, giving him the KO in the third round. It was complete opposite of what happened in their last fight. This time, Koya seemed to kind of leave and, like, give Hirotaka his moment. Last time, they were both standing in there for all the after-fight stuff, and it just looked so awkward. Like, everything about that scene was just not comfortable watching those two guys and how they exchanged after that first fight. Just not that they are mad at each other. It's just weird, you know, brothers fighting. This time, both of them knew it was coming. You know, the promo showed them. They were kind of laughing and joking and some of the previews because they're trying to make them stand and be, you know, give mean looks at each other. They kept doing a good job of taking the camera and showing the parents and how the mom was emotional. I'm sorry. That's just good TV. That's just them playing on good TV. So once the win happens, clearly, you know, Hirotaka was, you know, jubilant because, you know, he's a 60kg, best 60kg fighter on the planet, you know, or has the most recognized 60kg title in kickboxing. Good win for him. But really, for me, this comes down to Koya Urabe's decision not to go after him, not to get mean, not to look for a stoppage. I just thought that he was just too conservative. Well, I won't say conservative because he's landing fine. I thought he wasn't mean when he needed to be mean, and I thought that was the difference here. Next fight on the card, and it's going to be tough. It's going to be tough for somebody to beat this guy for my fighter of the year. A lot of good performances throughout, but in one of the fights of the year at that, Takuro, the 55kg champion, gets a second round KO victory over Charles Bongiovanni, and Charles Bongiovanni came out, like, both guys were throwing, you know, clean shots. Bongiovanni was doing a great job of scoring clean offense and scored a down in the first round. So he couldn't have had a better start, despite the fact that he was getting hit with some shots. Then comes out round two, and Takuro immediately starts landing big shots, big combinations, scores a down, follows it up with another down, and then finishes it with a left hook for three downs in the second round. This guy is all action. He is all action. He is a guy who is carrying a weight class right now. Clearly, there are some people that I would love for them to bring over and kind of showcase because I know that, you know, Damon Trainor's a smaller guy. I'd love for him to come over and get that opportunity, even though Trainor's a full rules Muay Thai guy. He's returning to the sport of competitive fighting in March, so I wouldn't mind if they brought him over. You know, Andy Housen, Lord of War, he can kickbox just fine because he's got that style. I want those guys to also get the opportunity to compete against Takuro. Wouldn't even be a bad idea to bring, you know, consider. I mean, there are some ties that they could use. But all in all, I really just want to see as much of this guy as possible. He's a very entertaining fighter. This fight was everything that I wanted to be. It was all action, and I really, really enjoyed it. I'm hoping that we get more of a performance from these guys down the road. I'm really hoping that we get more tournaments, more things to sell the weight class, because this is going to be it. This is K1's niche in the sport. They've got fights for the lower weight class. If nobody else is doing it, they're doing it, and they're doing it the best. They're bringing people out. They still have that dream. If you're a smaller fighter, 65 kgs, you've got something to, I'm going to win here, and I'm going to dream big, and hopefully my manager gets me opportunity in one of those cards. This is what they do best. Takuru, they got to push him as a star, and the best way to do that is to keep doing tournaments, keep doing things where he can showcase his abilities, because he is all action, and he is so, so fun to watch. The next fight on the card I'm going to talk about is the guy who I think should challenge for the 65kg tournament, our champion in Kufertex. Masaki Nori comes out and puts on an awesome performance against Yosomi Soda. My thing with Masaki Nori, despite the fact that, you know, he's my son, and I've been watching him forever, and I've been, you know, following him and promoting him and pushing him as an athlete, I truly believe he's got the tools to beat Kufertex. But this fight here, right here, is one of the examples of why I like him so much as an entertaining product. He's got a different style than a lot of people. He can play combinations low kicks, but his single low kick game, the way he needs the leg, the way he does that kind of kick where he uses his heel to the thigh, his high knees, how he uses his step up knees well, how he can, you know, pull the guard down and literally shoot the knee over your shoulder like it's a hook. He's just an all action fighter. Like, I really, really enjoy everything about, you know, his product and how he competes. He is a special fighter. I'm really want to see more of him. And in this fight with Soda, it's just the kickboxing Soda was never able to pick up. He was never able to get by, never able to get by the tools. I really just thought that he was out there competing, but the skill advantage was so in the favor of Masaki Nori that the things that he did, the performances that he put on, all I could do was sit back and think, wow, this kid is legit. And we're talking about a guy who's 22 years old, I want to say. The time is now, you know, him and Fairtex is actually for a tie. I mean, I feel like I've been watching him fight on international cards, but this is his first time getting that big time recognition. And he's, you know, one of the older guys of the fight card as far as all the guys that they've been using. So Masaki Nori versus Kufertex got to happen. Fun stuff here. I do a couple more fights from this undercard. I won't do them all. Definitely, I was wrong about Hiroki Nakajima as he gets a victory over Dmitry Grofov. Never thought Grofov got into an offensive flow. I thought he had moments here and there, whereas Nakajima was a consistent kickboxer throughout and was able to push the pace and kind of determine how things went. I thought he had really good pressure. I thought that because Grofov was struggling to be consistent, it gave Nakajima a little bit more opportunities, in particular when things got back to the ropes. It was a good win for Nakajima, who he is. I'm never going to pick him to be a elite 70kg fighter in the world, but, you know, they can bring in some guys for him, and if they want to, they can throw him in there against Murat Grigoryan so he can get ran over, because Murat Grigoryan's way better than he is, but I think that he's a mainstay for the brand. Leona Pettis gets a victory over Tega. The Tega, 19 years old, you know, I brought up that I thought that this guy had I thought he's going to win. I thought Tega was going to win. I thought that he had a lot of tools. I thought that he could do a lot of good things. I thought that he's a very skilled fighter, but he doesn't have enough kickboxing. So he's got the techniques that he does, it has power. You know, he lands effective offense, like, you know, like when he throws, but he has almost no combination flurry, almost no combination low kick game. The reason why a combination low kick game is always huge is because two reasons. Number one, you're scoring multiple offense, and that always does good on the scorecards. And also, you're putting consistent investment into one of the limbs of your opponent. That's huge. You gotta have stuff like that. You know, you really gotta be able to be offensively effective for for long periods of time. And if you want to put rounds away, you want to slow a guy and put points on the board as far as the scorecard goes. Tega doesn't have that. He just sits around, moves, look for big single shots, and he can score a flash here and there. And Leona Pettis just kept working, throwing offense. And I don't even think Leona Pettis is the best fighter in the world at 60 kgs. Is he going to beat, either of the Urabe brothers? No. But, I mean, in a fight, you never know. It could happen. But ideally, his skill set doesn't show me someone that could do that for a long period of time. Whereas Tega actually has the tools, the fast twitch ability, the power. Like, he has the tools to compete at some period of time. He just got to get more kickboxing flow. Next fight in the card, last fight in the card I'll talk about here. Massaro Glunder gets another victory as he gets a win over Ren Hiromoto. Ren, of course, is coming off of the fight with Kimura, the one that happened in September. That was the last KO1 card that they had. And in this one, I thought that the kickboxing pace was pretty even. It wasn't an explosion by either guy. I don't think that there was anything that really moved me as far as what I was seeing in the action for a while. But then Glunder started to get some consistent kickboxing going in the second and third round. I thought you could call the first round 10, 10-10. Not a lot happened there. Glunder did get going a little bit more. I think he can still be more offensively aggressive. The guy who came out and fought Masaki Nori earlier this year, like, that was probably one of the bigger upsets of the year. When he came out, he was so aggressive with his knees and his offense, and he caused that cut, and that was the difference in the fight, This one was just, it was so different, because I truly believe, when I look at it and I look at how this card came into play, I was like, if he's going to turn up the gas at any period of time and score some consistent offense, Ren is the guy to do it against. He really, really is the guy to do it against. If you don't turn it up against a guy who's just kind of playing a slower kickboxing game in front of you, it's going to be that much tougher when you get a Fairtex in front of you. So we'll see what comes from Massaro Glunder. I just love that he's getting these opportunities. He's now fought for the promotion. I want to say this is his third or fourth time this year. So he got Nori, he fought Kimura, and this is his third fight that I can think of off the top of my head. So I'm glad that he is getting the opportunities, and he's, coming out, he's making the most of it, making a brand for himself, which is really, really tough to do. So Glunder goes out to Japan for the fourth fight he had there out in Japan this year, third time for the K1 brand. Good luck to him moving forward, and I want to see more of this guy. I really, really do. Next fight card I'm going to break down is the Infusion card. As I was just saying with K1, having their most entertaining brand or their most entertaining product of the year, I felt, and one of my nominees for card of the year. This one might be, just in terms of the stars having fights that push them, this is probably one of my favorite fight cards for in the Infusion brand this year. Going to go ahead and we'll go from the bottom of the card up. I did not like the decision with Lorena Klein as she gets a victory over Melanie Huggis. My reason for that is I thought that in the three-round frame, I thought that Melanie had done enough. In the beginning of the first round and the beginning of the second round, the only clean kickboxing offered in the whole fight came from Melanie Huggis. Like, I thought that she came out, scored clean offense, with combinations and kicks. I thought that she initiated the clinch more than she should have. And, I was talking to her on Twitter, and she was saying that she felt like she was working in there. But I felt like if she had just stayed out of it, she would have been successful. Lorena Klein, the entertainment she brought to the fight was when she came sprinting to the ring, and then she dove through the ropes and did her roll thing. After that, she would just kind of run in and get clinch positions. She's made a little bit of her name for herself because she went out to Japan, and she beat Erica Kimimura, which is, one of the bigger upsets in kickboxing. She was able to get a judo throw in that, the shootboxing rules, and that scored big for her. But all in all, she's really more entertaining before the fight than during the fight. I would love to see her just, get some separation and look for clean kickboxing. But if you look at her fights where she's gone against, elite girls like, Imam Barlow, the separation and skill isn't even close. And this one I thought was two fighters that were pretty much on level with each other, but Klein never gave herself the opportunity to throw in space. Like, it's, I would like to see what her practices look like, because I almost never see any kickboxing from her. Because I know she can do it. Like, I know she's trained to do it, but she almost always gets into clinch battles. In the extra round, I thought that the round went to Lorena because she just kept initiating the clinch and then throwing knees aggressive, whereas Melanie was kind of, you know, a little bit more, even though she was active here and there, she's just a little bit more, I'll say stalemate-ish, like just kind of waiting for the ref to break in and going back to it, whereas Lorena was just, from the beginning, all over him. Next fight on the card I'm going to talk about is Tayfun Askin getting a victory over William Deinder. This shows how tough William Deinder is. Askin could have had this fight over with in the first round if it wasn't for William Deinder's toughness. He scored it down early, but Deinder got back up, and William Deinder is a good fight for a lot of people because not only does he keep fighting, you know, take a lot of damage and keep pushing, but he fights back. It's a different type of toughness. It's one thing to be tough when you're just down, you know, on the cards and you just keep staying on your feet. Like, you're not stopping me, I'm going the distance. That's one kind of toughness. A bigger kind of toughness, and I'd say the biggest type of toughness, is when you convince yourself to fight back. When you're down on the cards and you fight back. And I thought Tayfun Askin won these rounds. I thought he won the three rounds. But I thought William Deinder had some great kickboxing moments in there where he threw big hands and low kick returns. Tayfun Askin is one of the more underrated fighters in the world because of the fight that he had with Muhammad Jiraiya earlier this year, where, you know, probably one of the, you know, still my fight of the year, or my top five fight of the years. It's one of the candidates. It was a really all action fight. Askin did a great job of his combination, his body work there. He did a great job of his combinations upstairs here. Like he's a good kickboxer, but because of that loss to Jiraiya, the guy who they've been pushing, the tournament has been his way, winning this, his tournament seeding, and then winning these super fights. When February comes around, that's an opportunity for him to let the world know just how talented he is. But you can plug Tayfun Askin in and put him in there with some of the guys who compete in glory, like Steve Moxon, and Tayfun's gonna not just do well, but I would pick Askin to beat Steve Moxon. As tough as Steve Moxon is, Steve would have to land something significant, and Askin is got a good chin, and I would really like to see it. Like, I'd like to see that type of competition. So it's the type of thing that I think is coming for him if he just keeps winning. Next fight in the card we're going to talk about is Muhammad Jiraiya, as he gets a first round KO over Andre Oistroyano. Oistroyano. And Andre came out aggressive. I thought that he threw well, and I thought Muhammad Jiraiya spent too much time this fight loading up on big shots and not getting into his regular combination flow. Like, I just thought that I feel differently than most about his earlier performances. I thought that when he came with that crazy combination style, even as he got bigger and sat on shots, I truly believe that he was a skilled dude who, because of his combination flurry, he is going to make himself so tough to beat against elite guys. So when the opportunity came for, you know, him to, you know, step up in competition, it seems like he's been looking more, unlike the fight that he had with Askin, where he was combination flow and the combination flow got it for him later. He seemed like he was sitting on his power a little bit more. Now, that could be game plan. He could be thinking, you know what, I want to try to load up, score bomb something. Game plan a little bit different. That meant the round was closer than I like because the activities wasn't there. But in the end, Muhammad Jiraiya brings the show. All action. I'm excited every time I see the Destroyer get ready to go out there. This kid is absolutely awesome. So he comes out there, and without a doubt, he's looking for this opportunity. Andre throws a right hand. He had scored a body shot like maybe 30 seconds before to the body that was significant. And then all of a sudden, he has a well-timed teep, toes up. For those of you guys who teep, sometimes I've seen people kind of snap the teep out, and they do it with the toes down. And they can, you know, you've seen, it can work. I've seen in MMA, Anderson Silva, I think he was toes down when he hit Vitor Belfort that first time. But as far as having the toes up and finding that right moment, that right spot, I thought that they did a great job of really throwing that teep at the perfect time when Andre was extended with his right hand and the balls of his feet and a full extension of his knee caused that shot to score well to the body as Andre was extended. And Andre went down, and that was it. He was down holding his body on his knees. Awesome stuff by Muhammad Jiraiya. The tournament in February is going to show, you know, does he win this four-man tournament? It could mean another fight with Tayfun Askin. I'm excited to see more of him down the road. But it has to be pointed out that, man, this dude is going to have to fight somewhere that gives him more of a showcase, more of something that kind of show his skills, show who he can be, show how he stands on the world stage. Right now, he is one of the, you know, the best 70 kg product or around 70 kg product for the Infusion brand. He's done a good job. They've done a good job with him. But we want to see him against the Robin Van Roosmalens, the, you know, Georgia Trojans. We want to see him against the best one day. So that's going to mean this is going to move him towards a Glory or even the K-1 contract. I would love to see him against Marat Grigoryan and, you know, Senny Dalbec. I just want to see him fight elite names. So this moves him in that direction. Muhammad Boukhari got a decision that I did not think that he should have gotten. I thought that, and there were some close rounds in there, 1 and 3. I think were the rounds where I was like, all right, they could be swing rounds. I think, in my personal opinion, Kamaran Ahmedzadeh, I thought that he really, in rounds 2 and 3, brought a lot of combinations and pressures, and I thought he scored well. I thought that he was going to get the nod, if I'm remembering that correctly. Boubacari did nothing in the second round. He for sure lost the second round. He just wasn't himself, you know. Just didn't feel the combination flow. He always had weird power from strange angles, whether it be a knee or with the way he threw his hook. He just wasn't himself. He was able to get a victory, not looking his best, but man, he's offered so much more in the past, so I'm not going to jump on him. I know that he can do better. Big Mo will be back and performing better, but I thought Ahmedzadeh, his camp was furious. They were definitely down on the cards as far as how the cards were read and how they were scored. They went over to, you know, the corner of, you know, Big Mo, and there was just nothing but heat. They were just kind of, I couldn't make out what was being said, but they were so angry. They were yelling, and their whole team was just upset. They felt like their guy had come in and pulled off a great victory, but it wasn't meant to be on the cards. Next fight I'm going to talk about is the 19-year-old Fabio Quasi, as he gets a victory over Patrick Veenstra. Quasi's performed better than this. He's another guy who I'm going to give a little bit of a pass. He was able to do enough to get the decision, you know, but unlike the Boukhari fight, I thought Boukhari lost, a close fight. I thought that Quasi still won the fight. I just didn't think that he was as clean. I just didn't think that the offensive flow came as regular as it's come in the past. But man, really, really, look out for this kid, because at 19 years old, if he can put it together, it's just proof that there's always another one around the corner. I remember people saying, you know, what we're going to do just a couple years ago when K-1 goes away and so on. And you're already seeing Robin Van Roosmalen was able to emerge thanks to the It Showtime tournament where he beat, who I'm going to talk about later, Artur Kuchenko. And then you've got, you know, Muhammad Jiraiya. You've got young stars always coming up in the game all the time. It's never going to not happen. And Quasi is just a name to look out for. We'll see how he does long term, but we will look out for his name. Artur Kuchenko gets a victory over Hashim Algoy. Add him to the list of guys who didn't get into their offensive flow. Hashim Algoy came out, and I just thought that he was too. First of all, Artur Kuchenko was, you know, with combinations and movement, did a fantastic job in round one of not letting Hashim Algoy get anything. He didn't give him a stationary target. Like, he just did a great job. Like I look back on that fight and that performance, and the first thing that I thought was, man, this dude, he came prepared. He's in shape. He talked about how he likes training in Spain now. He said when he was in Holland, he liked the training and he learned from it, but he just didn't like living in Holland as much for him and his wife. Now him and his wife and his child are now down located in Spain. I thought that he did a good job round one. Hashim Algoy started to get going a little bit more in round two. Started to get the combinations going, get the kicks to slow Artur Kuchenko down. And Artur Kuchenko did a good job of staying with his movement, his combinations, throwing kicks here and there. And then in round three, it was pretty much Kuchenko throwing in big boxing combinations. And the moment that he, started to get, the offense going, the moment that he started to throw in a flurry, he'd step to the side and Hashim Algoy had nothing to hit back. So he'd just go bang, 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 move, bang, 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 move. And Algoy, to his credit, defensively blocked a lot of it on his guard. He really did do a good job keeping the hands up, taking that strong. But Kuchenko just kept the volume and stepping the right way so that Hashim Algoy was always restarting. So the whole fight was either about Hashim, the whole round was about Hashim Algoy either getting hit or him blocking a long combination exchange. Because Kuchenko, we're not talking about throwing threes. He came out throwing fours and fives. And he just really, like, that's That's how you got to do it in this game. When you go against an elite guy, you've got to put the volume in to win the rounds. And I thought Kashinko came out, did a great job. Well-fought decision, well-fought victory, and the scorecards treated it fairly. I thought that this one was the right winner. Algoy had moments, but I thought that he clearly lost two of the rounds and could have even lost three of the rounds. We go to the Infusion title as Ilias Belade gets a decision over Eddie Ruiz. Ilias Belade tried to get into his normal combination flow, the long series of combinations. He tried to do that right away, but he had to slip on the canvas a couple times, and the length of the bigger, stronger, I won't say stronger, but the bigger, seasoned Eddie Ruiz, who's fought at bigger weight classes, I'll say, he looked great with his step-up knees. He's played so long. He kept him at bay. Teeps at the right time. Knees at the right time. It kept Belade from being super aggressive when he was in the pocket. He was trying to be wiser about it. But as the fight went on, his combination flow, his volume, it slowly wore him down. So he's able to have more success with Ruiz in rounds, late round four and then round five. But man, Ruiz is the type of guy that proves, you look at Ruiz being brought in, you look at Kashinko being brought in, it is so important to these guys. When I look at these fighters and I look at these fights, they are doing a much better job of being serious about how they move their athletes. They're doing a much better job of saying, it's not good enough to just give you somebody that you can just blow out. You need to be pushed. You need to move. You need to be moved forward. And even if it means a loss like Algoy faced, Ruiz was the type of guy that Belade couldn't just run over. And that's vital. His last fight, I want to say, was with Santana, where he scored that awesome knee, one of the better KOs of the year. That's just a proof of what happens when you have a really good guy against a not-so-really good guy. You know, not that Santana didn't have good moments here and there in his fight career. He just was so overmatched by Ilias Belade. Here, Ruiz was there, and you could see that he's going to be there all fight. Like, you could see he had a fight on his hands the moment you saw the first round. And I was giving the rounds to Belade, but I couldn't stress enough that Ruiz did great work. Good card overall, fun to watch. And these are on InfusionLive.com. Like, They're almost always posted. And if you follow me on Twitter, I'm always going to tell you when they come on. I'm usually going to do play-by-play for them. You got to watch these fights. They're just exceptional, wonderful fights. And they're free. Can't beat that. Going to go ahead and mention, before I get to the stadium stuff, as we do Full Rules Muay Thai, I want to stop and do one Full Rules Muay Thai fight. I'm going to hit it up with France. It's Warriors Night 4, produced Fabio Pinca versus Bobo Sacco. And first, I'll talk about the fight, and then I'll talk about what it means long term. The fight, as I look at the fight, as I look at what's going on, the action, I thought that Sacco, in early rounds 1 and 2, had moments here and there. A couple of throws in the clinch, able to score some single body kicks, able to get the top position in the clinch. Fabio Pinca working a little bit slower, still scoring here and there, but definitely taking the patience of, I've got 5 rounds to get this in. Then comes round 3. Early, I thought the separation in the late second round and in round 3 was Fabio Pinca started to go combination kicks, started to play a little bit more kickboxing, and then get into Muay Thai clinches and so on afterwards. But as he started to get into those spots, Bobo Sacco was still only throwing single kicks, getting into clinch, or looking for dumps. Pinca starts to slowly edge up on the cards, and then all of a sudden, Sacco throws a kick. He blocks the kick. With the right hand guard up, he scoops with his left hand to come underneath the leg. He then drops, and I need you to watch this in slow motion. When Fabio Pinca drops the leg and encircles the left hook right off of it, he's got the right hand close to his head, and it's opened up by the fact that Sacco, one of the things that he was doing in the fight was he would score with a shot and then follow with the same side shot. It's something that people do to keep people from returning offense. So you'll see them low kick with their right leg and then throw a right punch right afterward while the leg's still extended, more of like a keep away shot. It can hurt people if they move into it, but more times than not, it's just to keep them away. Sacco was trying to do that. He scored with his left leg kick, and he was trying to push away with that left hand or score with that left hand extended. But Fabio Pinca, when he blocks the kick and he's got his right hand up, and his left hand is underneath the leg, he is going to whip the hook, and you're going to notice that his right hand is still connected to his head for defense. It's just a perfect maneuver. Left hook scores clean, scores the down. After the down is scored, you see that Sacco, and his whole demeanor was a little bit different. After that, Pinko's stronger in the clinch, still combinations and kicks, still throwing in the clinch, still landing big offensive knees, and down the stretch, it was all Fabio Pinko. At the last 45 seconds, Pinko kind of took the foot off the gas like the Thais do in the stadium, and if it wasn't for the ref kind of engage, you know, encouraging them to engage, he would have been even less offensive. But Pinko gets a victory here. But the importance of me talking about this fight wasn't just the fact that Fabio Pinko proved to be the best fighter in France still. The best full rules fighter in France. You know, him and Dylan Salvador is the other one that I think that, you know, people should take note of. But, man, the biggest thing that I took away from this fight was there is something to Boba Saka going against Fabio Pinko. Everybody knows that Pinko's tough. Everybody knows that Pinko goes against elite Thais. But at some period of time, somebody from your country coming up in your weight class has got to be like, my goal is to beat him, to go against him, to test myself against him. And if you've been listening to my podcast for a while, one of my favorite things that I've ever heard was when Stefan Leko got the victory over Badahari. You know, afterwards, of course, he was upset. You know, he spit on him when he's on the ground, that kind of stuff, because of all the trash talk he dealt with. But they did an interview with him afterwards, and he says, hey, he's still going to be really good, but he was 20 years old, and he was going against me. And he said, when I was 20 years old, I went against Ernesto Hoost. There is something to this sport where when you get to an age, you got to change up who you go against. You got to challenge yourself against one of the names out there. In France particular, which, once again, great promoters, good job with this card and so on, Boba Saka has seen that Fabio Pinko has been sitting at the top for a while. And instead of Pinko just continue to go against international fighters, he really decided that he was going to put himself out there and test himself against the best guy that France has to offer. This is something that I need to see more from everybody internationally. I really do. London is or England is a perfect example. In England, you know, I was watching the Yakao card the other day, and I was watching Liam Harrison. And in the Liam Harrison fight, they said something to the effect of Liam Harrison has been the number one in his weight class in England for like, I don't know, 12 years or something they were saying. I can't remember what the number was specifically. But in my mind, I'm seeing these Yakao cards. At some period of time, somebody around that weight class has got to be like, you know what? On the next main event of a Yakao card, I am going to test myself. I want to see how well I can do against this guy. I want to see how well I can do against the best fighter in my country for as long as it's been around. As long as Muay Thai has been popular to me, this guy's been number one. At some period of time, you got to want to test yourself against them. You know, at some period of time, someone in Italy's got to be like, you know what, screw you, George Petrosian, I think I can do it. Even if you can't, something in you's got to try. And I don't think there's enough try out there. I don't think there's enough people put in that effort. And one thing I'll give Bobo, you know, Sacco credit for, despite of what was going to happen in the result of the fight, is the fact that he went for it. You know, that's huge. That means something. It means something that you would go against a guy who might be better than you and see how well you can do and just test yourself no matter what. So shout out to Bobo Sacco. Sacco for going out there, and shout out for Fabio Pinko for once again proving to be the best full rules Muay Thai fighter and fighter in France, and truly in the last 15 years one of the best international full rules Muay Thai fighters. He's got to be in the top five, you know, in the world. Like, just Fabio Pinko, if there is a Hall of Fame for Muay Thai internationally, he gets in. He would get into my, you know, full rules Muay Thai international, what I would consider, you know, the elite group of fighters on the international full rules Muay Thai team. He's on there. You got to be him, John Wayne Parr, those kind of guys. He's on there. He's on par with them. He's really done a lot. He's had a fantastic career. And even though I wasn't big on the Sanchai victory that he got in Yakao, I still think he's an awesome fighter. We're going to go ahead and do the stadium talk that I promised. First of all, I want you guys to go to, as I say always, Muay Thais, M-U-A-Y, Thais like in a necktie, T-I-E-S. You're going to go there. You're going to go to their, you know, click on them. Go to the videos. You can subscribe to this guy. He does a great job posting stuff all the time. It's so important that people realize how much I appreciate this guy and how much, you know, he puts up, how much time he puts into putting these videos up and making sure he gets full Muay Thai out to the people. I'm glad that, you know, when I sit down and I see the views are, you know, For the more popular people, they're usually over 30,000, 35,000, so on. For those people who are just, you know, regular fighters who are active, they're around, you know, you're 13, you're 10, you know, that kind of whatever. But ideally, I want you guys to go follow, see these fights, see these athletes. I really truly believe you're going to enjoy the product. And I'll do my best to be as technical as I can in my explanation. And hopefully you will be drawn in and you'll want to know more about it. One person told me that they didn't get into stadium stuff until they heard me breaking down the fights. And then they went and checked it out and that got them into it. And that means something to me. I want more people to fall in love with stadium Muay Thai. And I remember when I first was doing this podcast, there was a guy who used to get on me about not doing enough full rules. And he said I'd always do just like a little bit here and there, do something for like 5 minutes here and there. And then I was like, you know what? I have taken it on myself to just do a kickboxing podcast for free because I love the sport and I wanted to hear a podcast and there wasn't one. And I said, if I can do my best to get more interest in the stadium fighting, to encourage more fighters to go abroad and challenge themselves by going out, sparring with some of these guys, taking some fights, training in Thailand, going and watching the stadiums, going and being a part of that. If this podcast can add to that in the way that I can, you know, give news to people who listen to kickboxing on a regular basis, I'm going to do my best to help there. And part of that means slowing it down and giving a much more technical breakdown and telling people what I'm seeing when I watch some of these fights. So we'll go ahead and we will jump into, we'll do from a few shows. The main shows that I'm going to, are the main fights I'm going to focus on is Raja had a card on the 19th and Nulampini had a card on the 10th of November. I will mostly be taking fights from them and I won't be doing everything, but I'll be doing a decent amount. I'm going to start off with Sang Mani versus Thaksin Lek. S-A-N-G-M-A-N-E-E for Sang Mani, and then for Thaksin Lek, T-H-A-K, also it can be also pronounced Thaksin Lek, just, you know, don't worry so much about the H. I've heard the announcers kind of say it both ways sometimes, just with my ear trying to catch it, but T-H-A-K-S-I-N-L-E-K, and this victory, first of all, was a kickboxing match. It was more of a kickboxing match than you're going to see in most stadium fights. I thought Thaksin Lek and Sang Mani kind of played a distance game where Sang Mani was looking for strikes, but Thaksin Lek did one of the better jobs, in particular in the third round, of getting a combinations and kick type game going. Didn't have low kicks. He played with more body kicks. He stepped away nicely. Sang Mani was missing a lot. After a while, Sang Mani would like engage in the clinch, but they kept getting into the double arm tie-up clinch where both arms are kind of extended, like they're kind of both blocking each other from, you know, throwing elbows or from letting their bodies get close enough for people to grapple and fight for, you know, neck positions. They kind of stayed with both arms extended high, almost like you would see a scarecrow, like that kind of arm, how their arms were up, and that's how they were tied up with one another. And in those moments, I thought that Sang Mani did an okay job of scoring knees to the leg, but those usually don't score that significantly, so he would have to get separation and then go back to work with the low kicks, whereas I thought Thaksin Lek did a much better job of being consistent with his offense, you know, the movement, the single strikes. I thought that he got high precision in the clinch a lot of times, and I really thought, looking at the fight and looking at the flow of it, this was the type of performance that just makes you go, you know what, this guy can win the fight anywhere. And Sang Mani is still a very talented guy, but I thought that Thaksin Lek in this particular performance was the better with the movement, with his kickboxing flow, with getting his hands involved as well, and staying in high positions for the clinch. Thaksin Lek gets the victory here. A couple of tricky sweeps that he tried. He wasn't able to get the guy to go all the way down. But I thought it was a pretty complete performance by Thaksin Lek as he gets the decision. Going to go ahead and go to KOs, and we're going to go ahead and talk a little bit about how to set things up technically. Some people ask me to be more technical. This KO offers that opportunity. Pet Lam Sin, P-E-T-L-A-M-S-I-N, gets a KO victory over Jump Pin Chit, J-O-M-P-I-C-H-I-T. Basically, I'll break down how the finish that happens. Early in the fight, Pet Lam Sin shows the switch kick, plays with the left switch kick, and then all of a sudden, he is going to switch stance, like he's going to go for the switch kick, and he's going to Pet Lam Sin is going to switch stance, like he's going to play with the switch kick. He gets Jam Chit to freeze up, lifting his leg and preparing for the switch kick to come. And instead, he pauses, he posts out with his left hand from the switch stance position and fires a left elbow over the top, bang, into your night. It was awesome, technically. Literally, once again, the breakdown is he shows switch kick with his left leg. Gets his leg like he's going to, so his legs switch like he's going to fire it. And instead of firing it, he just extends, extends his left leg and posts out with his left hand and fires his right elbow for a clean over-the-top KO. Awesome stuff. Petlon Sim, Jumpachit, check this KO out. Good stuff. Next KO I'm going to talk about, Thunanchai gets a victory by KO over Pet Yu Tong. Thunanchai, Thunonchai, gets a victory over Pet, Petutong. I think there are dashes in between, so Pet-U-Tong. This performance right here is just something that you see in a lot of boxing. Sometimes you just sell the strike in a different area and you're able to land it clean somewhere else. There's a moment where basically he is walking, Thunanchai is walking Pet Yu Tong down. He's going to throw a straight left to the body. Just gradually, he scores it to the body, clean shot. He gives the exact same look. Punch looks like it's going in the exact same area, but instead it fires straight up, scores in the chin, and Pet Yu Tong is gone. Out cold, leg folded, head resting on the lower rope. This is how you do it. This is how you play the game. Sometimes you land a strike just to get someone thinking low, just to get somebody, get their mind out of there. That's what body shots do. Straight body shots in particular can open up straight shots upstairs. This one lands clean. The second shot lands clean. KO, end of the night. Thank you for playing. Awesome stuff by Thunanchai. Now we're going to move to a fight where I actually disagree with the decision. And I've talked about how sometimes Thai Stadium judging, because of the kind of aura that comes with it, this idea that the Thais have been doing it forever, and the judges, they know what's best and they know what they're seeing, and if you disagree with the decision, it's because you don't understand the rules. Well, I feel pretty confident after watching fighting as long as I have, after being in Thailand several times, after learning, after asking questions, I feel confident in knowing what I'm seeing. Like, I feel confident with that. But I will say that there is something to when I see something close and there's a chance there could be something else. I don't feel that way necessarily this time. San, S-A-E-N, loses to Kaonar, K-A-O-N-A-R. He loses this fight, but his fourth round makes me wonder what they were thinking. Now, Sean had some moments for sure. He was able to get into clinch. He was able to score some knees. In particular, he was diverse because he was able to score elbows clean here and there when Kaonar was reaching in. He was able to score a clean elbow. I couldn't make out if there was a cut. Maybe that would be the difference because the cut scored so well. I couldn't make out if I could see a cut or not as I'm remembering that fight. But Sean had a dump early in the third. I thought that you could make the argument that he did some good work in the early portion of the third round. But after that, in particular the fourth round, I thought Kaonar pushed the pace. I thought that he engaged the grapple well. I thought he got to a full body clinch several times. I thought that he got two, maybe even three, if I'm remembering correctly, huge dumps late in the fight. I thought that he did a great job. He did, like I said, he did catch an elbow clean one time, but he just went right into the grapple and kept going to work. I thought he did so much work in the fourth that it was going to be his fight. I thought that he was the dominant fighter pushing the pace. But when they went to the fifth, San had already turned his foot, took his foot off the gas. He was chilling, just kind of waiting for the final decision. And the pressure of Kaonar late just kind of ran him into offense. Nothing significant, just kind of stay away from getting into any big exchanges, and San gets the victory. But as I mentioned before, I really did like Konar's work. I thought that he was going to get the nod, but it instead goes to San. How cool is Pat Morcott? I mean, this guy is, first of all, the fight is Shujaron, Shujaron, and he gets he comes out, gives good effort, but he loses to a guy who I've talked about in this show before, Pat Morcott, Petmorakot. Pat Morcott fights at the same pace. He's so slick. He is, if you're watching a movie about driving, Pat Morricone is, you know, is an easy rider type of, you know, filming, like a guy who you're going to watch something where you're watching something more cross country. There's nothing Fast and the Furious about him. He plays a nice, slow, this is the pace that we're fighting at, and you're going to lose at this pace. The way that he slides that left knee in, distance, the way he plays with his boxing, the way he subtly moves to the side and leaves his opponents punching air a lot of times, his body kicks that keep you off balance, just a complete performance from Pat Morricone. Pushing the pace, performing well, you know, on pretty much every stage. But this one in particular, you know, was a fight that showcases what he looks like when he's at his best. And I really liked his movement. I like his subtleties. Go ahead, check the fight out. You'll see what I'm talking about. When a guy fights slow, just, I've got you figured out. Everything you do is wrong. You know, you throw that punch, I've got that counter. I've got this body kick to throw you off. I've got all this offense to make sure you don't get going. And I just throw it at the right time. I don't have to overwhelm you with it. I'm just subtle with it, picking my spots. Offense. Next thing you know, I get my hands raised. Pat Morricone gets the victory. Not really an upset. It's a little bit different with Jovetic moving forward in his career. He's not the, you know, super kid that 2 years ago, you know, was beating everybody and beating them at what they did best. You know, now 18 years old, he's moved up in weight. He definitely looks, he was weighed 138 for this. His opponent was 140. Jovetic, Yodvicha, and he gets the victory over Litawada. Litawada gets the victory over Jovetic, And I think the reason for this was, one, Jovetic played with a lot more boxing than I'm used to seeing him play with, but I thought that Litawada did a good job of subtly just kind of stepping out of the way. Jovetic was punching at air a lot. Litawada had some good, well-placed body kicks. He engaged the clinch well, because for anybody who's seen Jovetic, he kind of attacks and he's got this clinch where he kind of gets in like a headlock and he looks like he's about to do a head and arm, and he'll just kind of hold on and then fire his left knee up. What Litawada did to neutralize it is every time he got in there, he used his offhand, his left hand, and he'd go right to the face of Jovetic and just start pushing him towards the ropes or out of the ropes, like just to kind of keep him from getting the leverage to score that knee. And he disrupted that and made it a stalemate every single time they got into those spots. That sort of slick, you know, taking that off the scorecard type movement, it's a gritty movement because it's in close, it's in a clinch. It's not the cleanest, prettiest thing to watch, but the effectiveness and what it means on a scorecard is Jovetic, who gets to these spots and he can score his side knees, he's not having success here. Jovetic is not able to power these bigger guys in the clinch. It has been a tougher climb for him. I wouldn't be surprised if he considered moving back down in weight, but that's rare. I think it's rare that you would see a Thai do that. I think he's going to stay at 38 and 40 and fight for a while. 141 isn't the prestigious division it was, I would say, 10 years ago. Well, it was there were guys who, you know, like Gilson Clay, who used to have that type of title. It's just, it's different. It's definitely different. But I do think Litawada's victory here showed that Jovetic, you're not just going to move up and beat us. Jovetic was able to get a victory the last time we talked to him on the show. Not the case this time. Last fight I'm going to talk about from the stadiums, and this one was also a fun one. Also one of the ones I was talking about, a new Lumpini. The last three I've been talking about have been from that November 10th Lumpini show. Fun stuff by Muang Thai against Saxon. Why was it fun? Because Saxon is an absolute killer. Like, this dude comes out there, he loaded up on all of his kicks, all of his power left hands. He ain't no joke. This guy, he ain't out there playing. He is out there serious, letting them hands go, trying to score effective offense. He's a mean dude. He's able to power his way to a decision here. Muang Thai had moments here and there. Muang Thai, M-U-A-N-G-T-H-A-I, Saxon, S-E-K-S-A-N. Saxon's just, you know, just so powerful. Just, he believes in his offense. And here and there, he got caught. Muang Thai was like, you know, bit down in the mouthpiece, decided to exchange here and there. But he just couldn't handle the pressure. Saxon was just all over him. Scored some shots that got Muang Thai, you know, hurt and in trouble. And one of the funnier things that you're ever going to see in your life. Tell me how many fights that you've ever seen with more uppercuts than the fight than the round that Saxon has, and I want to say the fourth round. Saxon's, after sitting up on power exchanges with straight left hands and body kicks, he decides to slide in a left uppercut. And the left uppercut scores, and it rocks Muang Thai. But instead of dressing up his offense, throwing a flurry of hands, and then going back to the shot, he just decides that he's going to walk right after him and just start fire and power left uppercuts, and just over and over and over, and he maybe throws like, I don't know, 50 in the round. I'm being serious. He throws a lot of uppercuts, and he goes out there, is able to get the victory, but I just like that he was mean, you know, mean, you know, from the early portions of the round, mean all third round, mean all fourth round. If you want to see a guy who goes out there with the intention of, you know, hurting a dude, making a dude, you know, not like being in there, that's what we got from Sek San. So I want to thank everybody for following the show. Particular, want to say love, prayers, and condolences to those people who are going through the tragedies all over the world. Nigeria had a bad one this past week, you know, where they had some terrorist attacks, and I think that it killed around 50. And of course, the big news in France with the multiple attacks, and that killed, you know, over 140, something like that, whatever. It's a scary world, you know. And of course, I go down my Twitter wall, I go down my Facebook wall, in particular, and it just seems like everybody's so against each other. You know, everybody hates whatever, you know, view somebody has, and everybody's so bold about whatever political statement, so on, whatever. I do pray, and I'm a Christian guy, so I know that everybody listening is not necessarily, whether they're spiritual or they're Christian or they're from another faith or whatever. The only thing I want to say is, man, you know, let's just start with just being cordial and civil towards one another, and let's love a little bit and understand differences. I'm not saying that you have got to switch your faith. I'm not saying that you've got to promote someone else's faith. I am saying that there is a love and respect that we can have, and you've got an example of that in your fight sport, in combat sports, and sports in general. But in combat sports, you're going to sit back and you're going to see people. That's why in my documentary with it, people from different religions, different races, different everything, and they're going to come together, and they're going to forget it all, and they're going to compete in the sport that they love. And the moment the sport's over with, they're going to go hug their corner, the people who put them in that position, and they're going to go hug their opponent. And I just think that it is one of the more loving, respectful things about this sport. And I hope that in the way that it brings people together, I hope that people who listen to this podcast, that you guys would be of that kind of heart towards one another. I truly don't want any person to be listening to this podcast with the heart of, we're better, you know, our sport's better and different and so on. We don't want to be that way at all. We just want to be grateful that, you know what? What a fantastic, wonderful sport that we have. And what are the fantastic, wonderful people who engage it. So God bless everybody. Have a good one. And definitely love one another better. Peace.